KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, President George W. Bush cast his first veto as chief executive against a bill that would have allowed for federal funding for embryonic stem cell research. We'll get analysis and response to the president's action and talk about what his veto means for California and the nation. Forum is next with your calls and emails right after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. On Tuesday, the United States Senate passed a bill by a 63-37 margin that would expand embryonic stem cell research funding for studies on embryos left over after fertility treatments and donated for stem cell research. President Bush, who drew the line back in 2001 on federal funding for such research, exercised the first veto of his presidency, knowing full well that a two-thirds veto override was not destined to occur. Days-old embryos with embryonic stem cells are believed by scientists to hold promise for treating diabetes, heart disease, and spinal cord injuries. In this morning's opening hour of forum, we want to focus our attention on what the defeat of the Senate bill by presidential veto bodes for California and the future of stem cell research, as well as what it means politically. And on that note, we're going to go first to Washington before we meet our panel and welcome Mark Sandlow, who is Washington Bureau Chief with the San Francisco Chronicle. Morning, Mark.
Good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you aboard here. Well, on the one hand, Democrats are going to obviously make this a big issue, maybe a central issue. And yet at the same time, there's some speculation. In fact, I saw it on your blog that it may actually work to the advantage of the Republicans. How's that?
Well, that's right, Michael, because I mean, the conventional wisdom, you look at polls, Americans overwhelmingly support stem cell research. They support federal money being spent to go ahead and pay for stem cell research. The fact that a Republican president has just vetoed that bill, his first veto of his presidency, is likely to drag the president down perhaps a few notches in the polls, and traditionally that's bad for Republicans running for Congress. What's different in this case is the president is fighting with the Republican Congress itself, a body that he has seen eye to eye with on many, many issues, most issues, since he was sworn in almost 6 years ago. So Republicans who are fighting for their political survival here, I mean, their majorities in the House and even in the Senate are in danger for November, are now in a position where they can go back to their constituents and say, yeah, you may not like what the president did, but he was vetoing our bill. We're not a rubber stamp of this president. Don't listen to the rhetoric of the Democrats here. We have our own independent mind. We're with you on stem cell research. The present one was the one who stopped it from happening. And in that sense, at least as a national issue, it's not obvious to me that it hurts the party as a whole. But adding to a caveat to that, Michael, there are certainly a handful of races, and it may be as many as several dozen cases around the country, races where the Republican candidate opposes stem cell research and the Democrat supports it, which could be trouble for the Republican candidate. The race that's gotten the most attention is Jim Talent's Senate race out in Missouri.
Yeah, but there's also Rick Santorum in Pennsylvania, George Allen in Virginia. I mean, if anybody's going to benefit, it's presumably going to be the moderate Republicans, isn't it?
That would presumably be the case, and this is the sort of issue probably not as important to most voters when they go to the polls as what's going on over in Iraq or as to gas prices, but this is the kind of thing that will add to frustration at frustration at Republicans where there is a difference between the Democratic and Republican view.
What about over here with Richard Pombo's race? I mean, is this going to hurt him, do you think?
Well, you know, it could, although I was actually surprised to go over to his Democratic opponent, Jerry McNerney's website this morning and not see it anywhere on there. Now, for all I know, he's preparing all sorts of campaign material on this. But yeah, there you've got a race where the Republican is against Richard Pombo, is voted to uphold the president's veto, in other words, voted to end federal research into stem cell And, you know, his district, which includes parts of Alameda and Contra Costa County and heads out to the Central Valley, my guess is that a majority of voters disagree with Pombo on this, and you would think that's good news for the Democratic challenger.
What about the cost of this to the White House, Mark? I mean, certainly President Bush looks principled to his base, and he's, if anything, shored up his base as a result of this stand. How does it affect things?
It was, you watched the theatrics yesterday in the White House, and, you know, the president had surrounded himself by children, by babies who were literally crying and hollering and interrupting his speech to the president's delight and smiles.
Snowflake babies, they're called, right?
Snowflake babies who indeed were, you know, in a sense adopted. These were leftover embryos from fertility clinics that were adopted by other women and developed full term and grow up into children. And there are indeed hundreds of these. And Bush's point was, you want to push stem cell research on these. Well, these kids would not have made it if we had been researching their embryos instead. Now, of course, for the hundreds that are developed into children, there are thousands that are discarded by these fertility clinics because they are either of no use or they simply don't survive the process of trying to keep them going. But you know, Bush does look like a man of principle. This was the biggest political decision he made prior to the September 11th attack. He went on primetime television in the summer of 2001, and while everyone thought he would capitulate to a degree, say, well, maybe some stem cell research is okay and the rest of it's not, his capitulation was very, very small. He said, we will allow federal funding only on stem cell lines that are in existence as of today, but from here on out, no federal, no taxpayer dollars will be spent on research into the future. And he laid down his marker there, and he hasn't budged from that in 5 years. And, of course, to the right, that looks principled. You know, to the left, it looks like that line by the comedian Stephen Colbert, who liked to say about Bush, here's a guy who believes on Wednesday exactly what he believed on Monday, regardless of what happened on Tuesday.
Yeah, to the left, it looks like ideological rigidity, I imagine. But at the same time, as Tony Snow pointed out, the president had threatened vetoes 141 times, so this makes it all the more dramatic, really.
It does, and there will be an assumption here, I suppose, that after signing something like 1,150 consecutive bills and finally putting his foot down here and saying, this is where I use my veto pen, finally in the sixth year of my presidency, people will see this as perhaps one of the most important bits of legislation he's ever dealt with. You know, I'm not sure that's the case. I think we have a confluence here of Republicans feeling the pressure of the election in November and going ahead and pushing a bill, the president feeling that he can't bend on an issue where he has expressed, you know, a certain moral clarity in the past. And I think it just happened. It was on this bill. There are an awful lot of Republicans who thought that the president would be vetoing, you know, highway bills, spending bills, pork bills. But it didn't happen there. Instead, it happened on stem cell research.
Mark Sadlow, again, is Washington Bureau Chief of the San Francisco Chronicle, joined us from the nation's capital. Mark, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
And let me tell you who is with us for the rest of the hour. We have a panel assembled right here in studio with us. Arnold Kriegstein is Director of the Institute for Regeneration Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. We welcome you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Bob Klein is Chair of the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee for the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine. And good morning, Bob Klein.
Morning.
Let me also say good morning to Jesse Reynolds, who is Director of the Project on Biotechnology Accountability at the Center for Genetics and Society. Welcome, Jesse Reynolds.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Let me start, Arnold Kriegstein, with you, and let's begin by just talking about what this means. I guess it means we have to, in California, continue to look for private funding and rely on private funding.
That's exactly right, and that's been the situation all along, and that really has not changed. We're lucky here in California that there's support for this activity and that there are philanthropic individuals willing to support this effort. And, of course, as you know, the citizens voted overwhelmingly to support Proposition 71 and establish the CIRM, the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine. And Bob Klein is right here to my left, and he can address what that means for our efforts. But we're very much looking forward to the day when those funds will be available.
You're going to continue, in other words, to develop stem cell lines without federal funding. That's indeed the way you have to push and the way you have to move at this point, right?
Absolutely. In fact, at UCSF, we created some stem cell lines back before 2001 that are on the so-called approved or presidential list as of 2001 as well. Ironically, those lines were themselves created with private funding. And since that time, we've continued with private funding, with partnership with industry and foundation support to generate additional lines, which are, in a sense, improved over those original ones. But those lines we cannot experiment with in our laboratories because we're using NIH funding and we can't mingle approved and non-approved NIH activities.
We were talking, in fact, before, and I was mentioning that New York Times today mentions that the 21 remaining lines have become contaminated and, by mouse cells. Bob Klein might want to address that some more as we move along here, but I'm interested in finding out from you, what kind of a difference would this have made if the money had gone through, if the federal funding had gone through?
Well, first I should mention, it's not so much the federal funding that was at issue here. It was just the ability for scientists to have this effort supported by the NIH. But there was no appropriation associated with this, so the NIH budget would not have increased. And so in terms of real dollars, there wouldn't have been a real flood of funding to this activity as a result of this bill. But what it would have allowed is investigators like myself and others around the world, to start using these lines that have been developed since 2001 in their existing space and with their existing equipment, all of which is largely federally financed. And so that's activities that we are unable to do right now. So that the ability to actually study human cells at the same time as an investigator might be studying, say, mouse cells, which can really propel the field forward much more quickly, that opportunity is now lost. And very few institutions have taken the steps of creating separate laboratories or special environments in which to study these lines that can't be studied with NIH funding.
It is safe to say, though this has become a moral issue, the president has put it out there as a moral issue, that here in California, voters feel very differently about this, obviously not only because of Prop 71, but just in general. There is major support for this.
Yes, that's exactly right. In fact, I feel very privileged to be in an area where, in addition to very bright scientists and colleagues, we also have a citizenry that's actually in support of this activity and that's willing to fund it. And that creates an environment, I think, where we can really move forward as quickly as we can, given our current level of resources.
Again, Arnold Kriegstein is director of the Institute for Regeneration Medicine at UC San Francisco. Bob Klein chairs the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee. And this bill actually was kind of complementary in some ways to Prop 71, at least the original House bill, wasn't it?
Yes, it certainly was. The California voters in 2004, by approving $3 billion for stem cell research to be funded over 10 to 12 years, provided a core level of support for California research institutions, universities like University of California, San Francisco, that Arnold Kriegstein represents, research hospitals like the City of Hope, and research institutions like the Salk Institute that is famous for the polio vaccine. We have a tremendous legacy in California. But as Dr. Kriegstein says, this bill would have really helped California leverage this money because currently you cannot use federally funded lab space or federal equipment that has previously been paid for this research. The California funded research for this under Prop 71 has to be totally segregated, and donors have really been inspired by the vision of the voters in approving this. There's $200 million of private capital that's come in since in 2005 and 2006 to date, supporting stem cell research in California because we establish a constitutionally protected sanctuary in California for this research and the funding mechanism for the research.
You've also developed some anticipation bonds here in terms of funding. Talk about that.
That's right. Because of ideologically driven litigation to try and stop the research in California under Proposition 71 from some law firms that were behind the Terry Schiavo case, for example, we have created bonds that allow us to move forward even during the litigation. We've closed $14 million of that, funding 169 research fellows in California, with 16 of them being at UC San Francisco. We are about to close another $30 million of those funds for our next grant round. And over the next year, while we go through the Supreme Court, given that we've already won the case at the Superior Court, we will have funded about $100 million of research under Prop 71 through these bridge financing mechanisms.
How long do you anticipate this court action to last before it's over?
Well, we hope to be through the Court of Appeals, which has given us an expedited hearing schedule by the end of the year, and then through the Supreme Court shortly thereafter. But to be conservative, we've said we'll be through this process in a year, and the Superior Court has given us a total home run. They've stated very clearly we're constitutional on every ground. There's 100 years of case precedents behind us, and we're operating completely within the statutory framework and the approval of the voters on Prop 71.
Now, you phrased this opposition as being ideologically driven. We'll hear from Jesse Reynolds, who is with the Center for Genetics and Society, and they are in favor of embryonic stem cell research, but they have some concerns about regulatory issues. In fact, I think Mr. Reynolds referred to a regulatory vacuum, and yet you've been following, as I understand it, some pretty strict guidelines here, particularly as laid out by national academies.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jesse's group is not part of the litigation. The litigation is ideologically driven. There's other individuals who have different points of view. It's critical to point out that we work with the National Academy of Science, the preeminent group of scientists that are approved and incorporated into law by the Congress of the United States to set standards for this country in developing the model medical and ethical standards for this research in this country. We have adopted those. Those are part of our regulations in place. So we are in California now leading the country with the finest medical and ethical standards that have been enacted on a comprehensive basis in the world today.
Robert Klein, again, is the chair of the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee for the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine. Jesse Reynolds directs the Project on Biotechnology Accountability at the Center for Genetics and Society. You seem to have a lot of concerns about this, Jesse. Let's lay them out.
Well, thanks. Bob mentioned the research standards both in California and at the level of the national academies. Our concerns with those are that although in some places the content is good and in other places there's areas where we'd like to see it strengthened, in the end the enforcement mechanism in both cases is inadequate. The National Academies is an advisory body, it's not a regulatory body, and what it issued are merely recommended guidelines, not regulations for stem cell research, and already there's some private corporations who have said, well, we're not going to follow them because we disagree with some of the content. And here in California, California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, the granting agency, has developed regulations for the research that it funds, but oversight of those regulations are left in the hands of committees that are formed by the research institutions themselves and will be dominated by research scientists. So we're concerned that this will that this amounts to self-regulation, and that we're worried we might see some replays of scandals in stem cell research that we've seen in the past year. But unfortunately, that would be here in California.
You've also expressed some concern about research subject protection.
Right, right. Well, that's just one example of the number of issues that are at play here. Research subjects, intellectual property. The protection of women who will be asked to provide eggs in order to go forward with using cloning technology for
maintenance of stem cell lines.
Right, right. I mean, there's a number of key issues here, and
it's a big laundry list. Isn't it?
It is a laundry list, and the California Institute has been working on these standards for about a year now, and there are a lot of issues, and. And we're concerned that leaving it in the hands of committees that are formed by the institutions just won't have any teeth.
But you would have been pleased had this bill gone through the Senate and passed?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's clear that Bush's restrictions are out of date, and what we need is to get the entire nation on the same footing in terms of what the standards are. What's going on now is in the absence of an active federal body, a number of states are going ahead with not only their own funding programs, but their own oversight mechanisms. So we're ending up with a patchwork of regulatory schemes. Here in California, we're even developing two regulatory schemes, one for state-funded research and one for the rest. And so not only would this federal bill have opened up money for a larger number of stem cell lines, but it would have been the first step towards the type of comprehensive federal oversight we need of this research.
What about these concerns, Bob Klein? Let's get some response from you.
Well, we are always trying to improve our standards and our enforcement, but in the case of any research funded by the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine under Prop 71, the National Academy's guidelines have been made into regulations that have gone through open hearings in California. They've gone through comment periods, public comment periods. In fact, for medical and ethical standards, three separate public comment periods to bring the best and the brightest minds together. The more than 70 patient advocacy organizations, from cancer to heart disease to diabetes, were part of the group endorsing Proposition 71, and they have submitted their comments. They have scientists, they have lawyers, are looking out for the patients, and we've incorporated, I think, 90% of the effective representation from those patient advocacy groups in terms of their comments. We see a high consensus behind the regulations we put in place in terms of the strictness of them and enforcement, which clearly means that anyone that violates our standards, they get cut off of research funds, which is a tremendously powerful discipline tool.
This is not comforting to you, Jesse Reynolds?
Well, in the end, it's the to use perhaps a cliche, it's the fox guarding the hen house situation, where you'll have committees dominated by research scientists and enforcing standards to their own colleagues. And while this may work a portion of the time, and it may even be adequate a majority of the time, the stakes are high enough that there needs to be a centralized oversight, at the very least, of these committees. And ideally, this will happen at the federal level. Now, it doesn't seem likely that this is going to be happening under this administration, but it would have been ideal to see the Stem Cell Research Enhancement Act pass so that we can start having that conversation.
Speaking about this administration, Arnold Kriegstein, what do you say? I mean, we've said that Californians are generally behind, in a strong way, embryonic stem cell research. What do you say to those out there, and here in California for that matter, who go along with the president that this is a moral issue? That's pretty much how he's framed it. It's a moral issue.
Well, in a way, it is. This is an area of science, I think, that is more politically and ethically charged than most others. It really deals with definitions about when human life begins.
And the president says he's crossing a line, essentially.
Yeah. That's right. And so the question really is not so much whether somebody with an opinion like that is right or wrong. It's just a question of how do you deal with the facts on the ground as they are. And that is that the embryos that we're talking about are actually existing currently. They've been created. Most of them are destined to be destroyed. And the public needs to understand that what we're really talking about are day-old embryos that most people have trouble seeing without a microscope. They're very small. They consist of a few hundred cells.
So it's smaller than a typographic mark.
Yes, smaller than the period at the end of a sentence. And they are undifferentiated cell types. There are no organs. There are not even cells that have started committing themselves to the major tissues, endoderm, ectoderm, and mesoderm. And so they are really not what most people might think of as an embryo. They're certainly nothing like a fetus, and there are no organs to be harvested. And they already exist, and they're slated for destruction. So the real question is, whether these are human beings, and secondly, whether scientists should be able to use these cells to try to develop therapies and cures for currently devastating diseases that we can't treat.
Bob Klein, you want to add something? Sorry.
Yeah, the president's position is totally misleading on this, because the bill very specifically states that you could only use those cells for research, these microscopic cells stored in freezers at in vitro fertilization clinics, when the couple had decided they were going to be destroyed. So any cells that were going to be available for adoption would not have been affected at all. And the cells that were going to be destroyed, many pro-life Republicans like Senator Hatch from Utah have said he considers it a pro-life position to back this research, because instead of throwing these cells away.
Senator Frist also.
And Senator Frist, instead of throwing these cells away in the trash, you use these cells for research that could save a life. A life that affects 110 million Americans with chronic disease or injury. These are lives of people with families, with children, that we have an obligation to.
Let me extend my obligation to our callers and invite you to join us with any questions or comments you might have, and you can do that now toll-free, 866-733-6786. Feel free to join us or email us, forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour about the implications of President Bush's veto of the embryonic stem cell bill for California and beyond. Just talking off microphone, in fact, about the fact that California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger personally asked the president, requested the president not to veto the bill, and former California Governor Ronald Reagan, former President Ronald Reagan's wife, widow Nancy Reagan, petitioned a number of Republican senators for the same. But the president went ahead with the veto, and we heard earlier from Mark Sandlow about how that's going on in Washington. We're continuing this discussion with our panel, which includes Arnold Kriegstein, who is director of the Institute for Regeneration Medicine at UC San Francisco, Robert Klein, chairman of the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee for the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, and Jesse Reynolds, who directs the Project on Biotechnology Accountability for the Center for Genetics and Society. We're going to go right to your phone calls here. And again, you can call us toll-free at 866-733-6786 or email us your thoughts or questions you might have. And our email address is forum, F-O-R-U-M, at kqed.org. That's whether you're listening to us on radio, Internet, or Sirius satellite. First caller from Los Altos, Jacqueline, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. I just want to thank Bob and everybody in his efforts who are working towards supporting stem cell research and for their amazing efforts that they've done so far across our country and the world. I'd like to express my outrage and great disappointment to the president. We're fighting wars all over the world, and his is an opportunity to save lives, yet 100 Iraqis or more on average are being killed every single day. And this is the thing that he needs to do most, is to prevent the scientists from doing their utmost efforts in creating opportunities to save lives and repair lives that are broken and that need urgent care. So I don't need any comments. I just want to say thank you to the world of pioneers and scientists who are doing everything they can to support stem cell research. I am a fan.
Thank you for that call. Actually, a number of Republicans who support the president were talking about the wrongness, to use a word that's probably not appropriate here, that's wrong, but of taking taxpayer money and putting it into, these are pro-life advocates, obviously, putting it into something that is morally objectionable. And yet it occurred to me, and I'm not on any soapbox opera here, soapbox or anything, but, you know, what about all those Americans who are objecting about the war right now? I mean, the same argument obviously can be made. Anyway, let me find out what some more of you think here. And Joda, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with us. Morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I have a pretty unnuanced point I just want to make out here. I am for basically the stem cell research. I understand. I mean, I get it. I feel I get it. But I can understand. I mean, especially if you're coming from a pro-life perspective. I mean, I feel like I can understand why you would want to maybe close the doors on this potentially. What are the possibilities of a slippery slope on this? That possibly, yeah, now you've got these regulations where that prevent the usage of people going in and selling their embryos or making money. But what happens later on down the line, opening up the Pandora's box possibly of exploitation of the selling of these parts, these pre-born entities, basically?
Slippery slope, Bob Klein.
It's a very important point, and with Proposition 71, the voters approved a constitutional ban on human reproductive cloning related to these funds. In addition, we prohibited the payment for any of these cells that would be used for research. So it is very important to understand that the cells have to be donated for humanitarian purposes, often because the individual family has someone suffering from MS or Crohn's disease or juvenile diabetes, an inherited disease, and they don't want to see the next generation suffer from those diseases. So they're contributing them out of a desire to reduce human suffering and to advance medical research.
Let me thank the caller. And Arnold Kriegstein, what you often hear from the pro-life advocates is that this research could be done with adult stem cells or umbilical cords. In fact, that's one of the arguments that has come up right from the beginning. Your thoughts about that?
Well, it's certainly true that stem cell research extends well beyond just the embryos that we've been discussing. Adult stem cells, cells derived from a range of adult organs and even from developing younger patients from placenta and umbilical cord and so on, have all got potential for certain types of functions, and they all are legitimate targets for study. But the problem is that not all of them have the potential. In fact, most do not have the same potential right now that we see with embryonic stem cells. And part of that potential is the ability for these cells to indefinitely self-renew, that is to start with a single cell line and create unlimited numbers of cells. And this is going to be especially important when it gets to developing a product, a cell therapy that can be delivered to patients. One of the important things is that we have large numbers of cells that are all equivalent, that are all pathogen-free, that are safe to inject, and that we can actually treat used to treat a wide number of patients. It seems right now that that's a hope that's more easily achievable using an embryonic stem cell that we know already has the ability to self-renew like that. The adult stem cells are much more limited, for instance, in their capacity to self-renew. They're also less pluripotent, that is, they already are committed to particular types of cells, and therefore they can't make the variety of cell types that an embryonic cell might make. That may or may not be important in certain diseases.
Jesse Reynolds, you want to say something?
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on the point that the caller made. I think there is there's a legitimate concern around a quote slippery slope situation here with these technologies, because stem cell research, and in particular using the cloning technologies, so-called somatic cell nuclear transfer or SCNT, opens the door not only to reproductive cloning but also the designer babies scenario of genetic modification. And just to quote the Genetics and Public Policy Center at Johns Hopkins University, they issued a report that concluded that rapid advances in stem cell research and other genetic technologies make the possibility of successful permanent modification of the human genome much more likely. And as a society, we are running out of time to plan sensible policies. And yes, California does ban reproductive cloning, for example, but the majority of states don't, and the federal government does not. And with the self-regulatory system that we have in California, we believe that there's still potential for a lot of abuse.
Bob Klein, I know you have a response, but let me dovetail that with just something else from a listener emailed in and said, do we really need more high-tech medicine? Wouldn't we be better served as a nation if we put much more money into preventive and complementary alternative modalities and focused on making this available to all citizens? With so many people unable to afford any medical care whatsoever presently, I can't help but feel this is a misallocation of resources. Furthermore, I simply do not believe the claims about the miraculous cures that stem cell research will offer us in the future, either near or far.
Well, let me respect the caller's or the email and answer that question first, which is that adult stem cell therapies, which have proven cures for leukemia, stage 4 leukemia, multiple myeloma, bone cancer. Also, Dr. Richard Burt, head of the Department of Immunology for Northwestern University this year, published where he had full or substantial remission of lupus disease with an adult therapy. Dr. Richard Burt came to California during Prop 71 and helped me raise funds for the Proposition 71 because he said, I need almost an exact immune system match for my adult therapy to work. I can only treat 10 to 15% of the patients that could benefit. I need embryonic stem cells to help us understand how to get an immune system match, how to create an adult cell with an immune system match to reach 85% of the patients who will die even though I have a known therapy. These adult therapies are very effective. They can only reach a part of the patients they could benefit because of the lack of an immune system match. Embryonic stem cells are a key link to help us get to that match. I think the related point is I would join with Jesse in saying that the federal government should follow California and prohibit human reproductive cloning. The federal government is way behind on that, and that is an assurance that everyone should have in place.
We'll let you weigh in here, Arnold Creekstein.
Well, and I just wanted to address some comments to the caller because even politicians will often say that they have yet to see the potential of stem cells realized in any level. And the truth is that there are already proofs of principle that stem cell strategies, that is cell replacement strategies and drugs and therapies derived from stem cell biology will be helpful. And Bob Klein referred already to bone marrow transplantation, and that's been a practice now for many years. It allows the regeneration of an immune system, starting with the bone marrow's adult stem cell, and that's obviously saved many, many lives.
Would you concede, though, that maybe some of the ideas attached to embryonic stem cell research have been really overhyped? I mean, people getting the notion that Alzheimer's is going to be cured instantly, that sort of thing, Parkinson's will be go the way of the warrior, et cetera?
Absolutely. I think there is hype. It's clear that some of the goals people have outlined right now are likely not to be met, at least not in the short term, perhaps not in the long term. But I think the field of stem cell biology is so broad that the public needs to understand that there will be advances that may not immediately appear to be stem cell related. And if I could just for a moment talk about cancer, which I think is perhaps one of the lower-lying fruit in stem cell biology, and that is there's a sea change of opinion now about how some of the most aggressive cancers spread. And it appears more and more as though these are due to cancer stem cells. And most of your listeners are probably familiar with Lance Armstrong and about 10 years ago, his bout with testicular cancer. And when he was diagnosed, he already had metastatic disease. He had lung and brain involvement. In most tumors, this would already be a death warrant. But he had testicular cancer, which is a kind of germ cell cancer, and the chemotherapy that he was treated with was able to kill these cancer stem cells. And in his disease and other patients with that same disease, you can now cure patients, 70 to 90%, with this form of testicular cancer because the therapy targets the cancer stem cells that are really the source of the reseeding of this kind of a tumor. It's now becoming apparent that many of the most aggressive cancers that we can't treat today are actually also due to cancer stem cells. But we, unlike in testicular cancer, we haven't yet been able to identify those cells, develop markers so we know which cells they are, study them to find out how they differ from other types of cells and other kinds of cancer cells in that same tumor, and target them selectively. And that's research that's going on right now. Most of that is, in fact, NIH-fundable research. And eventually, I think, and probably sooner than some doctors and physicians may think, we may be able to develop drugs, that is, not cell-based therapies, but conventional therapies, based on our stem cell understanding of the origins of these tumors, that'll be able to treat these cancers.
And we're going to get more of your calls on here. Bob, you're on. Morning.
Yes, hi. One thing I'd like, a point I'd like to make is the argument that taxpayer dollars can't be used to fund this embryonic stem cell research is really fallacious. That if I don't like the war in Iraq or the administration's policy on war on global warming, et cetera, I can't say, geez, I don't want to pay my tax, therefore they shouldn't do these things. You know, in a democracy, when
you can make that option, Thoreau did and went to jail for it. I mean, you're right to do that.
Right, right. So I'm just saying it's a really fallacious argument that, 20 or 30% of the people don't like this, and therefore we shouldn't have federal monies. If it's really that morally repugnant, then it should be made illegal, which, of course, is what they eventually want to do. I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. I think those comments probably stand by themselves, and let's go to more of your calls. Herb, morning.
Hi. I'm 43 years old. I have Parkinson's disease. I've had it for 6 years. And, from where I sit in the patient advocate community, we thrive on hope. And, to sit and watch the Senate debate, was encouraging in a way to see all these people, stand up and talk about hope. But then, the president, with a single sign of the pen, basically, it's like getting hit in the stomach, And it's heartbreaking. But this is a moral issue, and I believe the morality is on our side, so I guess I want to hear your comments on that.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Actually, just dovetailing, here's Don, who writes, as the father of a paralyzed young man, I'm offended by President Bush's casual dismissal of research which might allow my son to walk again. The Democrats seem to understand this issue more than the Republicans. In the Senate, for example, all the one Democrat voted in favor of the Stem Cell Research Enhancement Act, all but one. Excuse me. This affects millions of Americans suffering with incurable disease. Personally, I plan to remember in November. Anybody want to comment on these calls, Bob Klein?
Well, we do need to recognize there are 63 senators that use courage and conscience to vote for principle because they understood their position was to represent the American public, which clearly backs stem cell research by more than 70%. So it is. We have a representative democracy where it's very clear from the House vote and the Senate vote that the intent of the American people and the representatives is to move forward with this medical research that has such promise. It's this year that we expect an FDA approval for the first embryonic stem cell therapy at University of California, Irvine, where Professor Hans Kirstad is going to address acute paralysis with embryonic stem cells at the Christopher Reeve Center. So it will be a field where we're starting our therapy development on embryonic stem cells right now with private money that's been in place, augmented by California state money. It will take years to get through the trials. There'll be many disappointments. There'll be some victories. But as Professor Crigstein has said, there are many different contributions we're going to get besides some cures down the line or some substantial mitigation of disease, and the knowledge that we will gain of the development of disease will allow us, whether it's in cancer or diabetes, to intervene and potentially mitigate these diseases very early, and we have to understand that contribution of this research as well.
Before I go to more of your calls, let me go to some of your emails. This is from Ron, who says, I think the critics of the veto are missing the point. What Bush has done is to force stem cell research to be done with private money, thereby mandating that any positive results will be exploitable by and profitable for the pharmaceutical corporations. Follow the money. That's from Ron. This is from Scott, who says, when will the hypocrisy of this administration finally be more clearly illustrated? This is not religious or scientific, but purely political. Who destroys the unused embryos these much more immorally questionable fertility clinics spew out? What is their procedure? Where is the moral outrage at that particular biohazard container? One could hope that the improved medical practices made possible by this practice could be used to help veterans of the president's Iraq entanglement that have been crippled. I'm so tired of being outraged by this hypocrisy. And here's Bob, who says President Bush may or may not have an opinion on stem cell research. He is simply playing for the votes delivered to him by the Christian right. It is with that group that the blame for the veto lies. And we'll go to more of your calls. From Marin, John, hi, you're on.
Yes, my name is John. My wife is an associate director of an NIH research center, and my son has ALS. And I wanted to make two comments. One was one of the gentlemen used the expression of fox in the hen house, referring to the CIRM board, that some of the members were associated with the universities. I find that appalling to say among those people, they would certainly go way down if they were ever suspected of doing anything untoward. Secondly, the use of the term slippery slope. It is an old term first introduced by Leon Cass 25 years ago when he was talking about test tube babies. We now have more than a million of those people now living in the United States. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for your call. Fox in the Hen House, Jesse Reynolds, you want to qualify that at all? Or?
Well, I think when you look at the structure of Proposition 71, which is the law that created the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine, the effect, if not the intent of it, it seems to be to isolate it from oversight by state representatives. Once the governing board of this institute, the ICOC, is appointed, it's really on its own. It's an autonomous quasi-public agency that's spending $3 billion of taxpayer money, and everyone on that board is an interested party in the research or in some way. Most of them are affiliated with the research institutions that will get the grants themselves, or are advocates for research into a particular line of disease, and I do believe that that such an arrangement is a dangerous one, with so much money at stake, with such critical research at stake, that that's one of the reasons that our organization came out against Proposition 71. We supported the intent of public funding of stem cell research, but this is just not the way to go about it.
So if this Senate bill had passed, would there have been a need for Proposition 71 or for the California Institute for Regeneration Medicine?
Well, I think if Bush's restrictive policies weren't in place in 2004, then Proposition 71 would not have passed.
We'll go to more of your calls, and we'll take a call from Santa Clara. Rachel, morning.
Good morning. It's my understanding that cord blood, which is the blood in the umbilical cord at the time a baby is born, is very rich in stem cells, and some people pay to freeze their cord blood in case it could treat the baby at some later point in life, and my husband and I decided to donate our daughter's cord blood in the hopes that it could help someone. So my question is, if we publicly funded the collection of cord blood in hospitals, wouldn't we have more than enough stem cells for research and treatment?
Arnold Kriegstein.
Well, there's a controversial aspect of the potential of cord blood to actually form embryonic-type stem cells, that is, pluripotent cells. So it is clear that cord blood can certainly be used the way bone marrow cells can to regenerate immune systems, to replace circulating blood-type cells. But the ability of those cells to turn into, say, nerve cells or endoderm islet cells in the pancreas that might be needed for, say, treating diabetes, those potentials of the cells, I think, have been more controversial. And examples where they've been able to develop into other cell types like that, which is known as transdifferentiation, the ability of a cell to go into a different tissue type, turn into a different tissue type, is much less clear. And there are examples where these cells fuse with other cell types rather than turn into the cell type of interest. And so the true potential of cord blood cells to be able to function like embryonic stem cells is not entirely clear. Not that it shouldn't be investigated, but that at the current time, the potential of those cells compared to, say, embryonic stem cells is not clearly established.
I wanted to go back to something that I alluded to earlier, and I mentioned in today's New York Times, Bob Klein, they were talking about the 21 remaining stem cell lines that go back to 2001 being contaminated by mouse cells. Are they virtually useless now?
Yeah. The the president on August 9, 2001, announced there would be 70 to 80 stem cell lines the NIH funds could be spent on. Those cell lines turned out to be about 12 lines that are very robust out of about 20 that actually materialized. Those 12 lines have been shown to be defective either because they're polluted by mouse feeder cell layer they're on, or because there's chromosomal rearrangements of those cells because they've not been replenished by any new cell lines over all these years, and we need new cell lines for the tremendous amount of research we're doing in this country. But we have 400,000 excess cells in vitro clinics that are slated to be discarded, and yet none of those can be accessed because this bill was vetoed. And the country is hobbled and paralyzed by these 12 lines that are out of date and have defects that would prevent them from effectively being used for therapy development.
So what's going on now vis-a-vis other nations who don't have these kinds of restrictions and the problems? I mean, obviously they're cutting way ahead of us beyond maybe even being able to catch.
Yeah, there's 17 nations in the world that have formed the International Stem Cell Forum for strategies on how to in a complementary way, develop our research for patients of the world. And in
Korea in a special case, of course.
Yeah, Korea is in a special case, and now Korea is trying to duplicate and follow the National Academy of Science and the California tight medical and ethical standards to eliminate their problems. But what we see is these 17 nations in February of this year invited California as a state in on equal grounds with these 17 nations, because California has 50% of the biotech research capacity in the United States, and as a nation has more capacity than any other nation in the world. So these
also
nations,
the sixth biggest economy in the world, right?
Absolutely. So we're working in conjunction with these 17 nations on trying to move forward in a complementary way with our research for the benefit of patients everywhere. We have to be committed to using the best research wherever it comes from in the world and using California funds to advance off of the best research that is published in the respected scientific and academic journals of the world.
Sandra, you're on the air with us. Morning.
Good morning. I would like to say that the people that you're hearing from, by and large, completely fail to understand the point of view of those of us who support the president's veto. I'm not saying you fail to agree with this. I'm saying you fail to understand it. And I think that's a major problem in any kind of a dialogue.
I'm having a hard time understanding it because of the noise in the background. I don't know where you are, but
I'm on a cell phone, so maybe that's not going to work. But what I wanted to say was that the people that I'm hearing from on the program are failing to understand the point of view of those of us who support the president's veto. And by that, I don't mean you fail to support us or agree with us, but that you don't come close to understanding.
You mean they're not compassionate or they're not empathic or they just don't understand?
No, what I mean is you talk about the prohibition against reproductive cloning as if that were an important issue. I think that's something I would disagree with, but it is not something that I think would be a make or break issue for us. You talk about profit. That's something I would disagree with, but I see no reason why the researcher should make a profit and other people shouldn't. You talk about other people in the world developing things, like hybrid lotus, for example, that the United States is not in the forefront of, as if those were important. For those of us who support the president's veto, it's not a matter of reproductive cloning that's a small issue so much. it's more a case that we feel that it is fundamentally immoral to use one person for the benefit of other people as if that person were a thing simply because we don't have an emotional connection to that one person.
Sandra, we've got a terrible connection with you, but I think I get the point that that perhaps the side in favor of embryonic stem cell research is talking maybe past those who feel the other way and not hearing what they have to say, not engaging, really. Anybody want to step up to the plate on that, Bob Klein?
Well, I would like to emphasize here that those supporting embryonic stem cells realize and restrict the use of any of these cells that would be discarded to cases where the parents specifically have given their permission. And these are microscopic cells that otherwise are going to be discarded. Again, and emphasize, you cannot, under the bill that was vetoed, use any of these cells if, in fact, it was going to be adopted, which we would applaud. So we are in a position where it's only if this couple believe that their cells, which come from their bodies, should be used for research because they want to, for example, avoid these terrible chronic diseases to be inherited by their children that other of their family members might have.
Dr. Kriegstein, quick email here from John, who's at the University of California. Immense amount of groundwork that must be done studying the differentiation of cells can be done with any mammalian stem cells. Why does one focus on human stem cells?
Well, first I should mention that the vast majority of research going on in stem cell biology today does take place in non-human cells. In fact, planarias, worms, invertebrates, zebrafish, mouse, all of these animals have things we can learn in terms of stem cells, and most of that work is funded by the NIH. But one of the critical aspects of human embryonic stem cell work is that for any of the advances that are being made in stem cell biology to translate into therapies for patients, especially cell-based therapies, we'll have to start working with human cells. Those cells will be the actual delivery instruments for whatever therapies we plan to deliver. And the sooner that investigators can start looking at those human cells, comparing them to the animal cells, seeing how they're similar, how they're different, the closer we'll get to actually treating some of these illnesses.
That's going to have to conclude us because we are at the end of the hour. I want to thank Arnold Kriegstein again with the Institute for Regeneration Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, Bob Klein, who chairs the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee, and Jesse Reynolds, who directs the Project on Biotechnology Accountability, the Center for Genetics and Society. Also thanks to Mark Sandlow, who was with us from Washington, Washington Bureau Chief of the Chronicle. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.